Ed and Rizan Ferrelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
It's 14 minutes past 10 and I have to say something. We will be discussing now topics of a very sensitive nature in this interview that we're going to do right now, including child abuse. So I just want to give you a warning. If you have kids around or people of a sensitive nature, maybe switch off, switch over. You can catch this chat on our podcast. Now, most of us use social media on a daily basis, I would say, but rarely do we think about what goes on behind the scenes at these platforms. So every day, thousands and thousands of videos and pieces of content are reported to teams of moderators to be watched, to be assessed and potentially taken down. There are thousands of Irish people doing these jobs and some of the content is of an extremely disturbing and graphic nature. I'm joined now by Chris Gray, a former content moderator at Facebook in Dublin. He has a new book out about the experience. It's called The Moderator, if you want to go and grab it. And he joins me this morning to tell me just what the job was like. Chris, you're very welcome to the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for coming in. Can you tell us about your time as a Facebook moderator and what you did every single day?
Well, I did every day. Well, I was working the evening shift, so I'd start at 6 o'clock. I'd come in, you'd do your emails, your admin, and then you basically just press a button marked just go, and it will just give you whatever is next in the queue to be dealt with. You have a look, you make a decision, you press a button, and it gives you the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and it just goes like that all day.
Okay. Do you remember seeing a video or a piece of content first that really kind of shocked you and went, oh my God, is this what the job is?
There's, you know, when you start, you're really excited and you're
sure.
all pumped up and you kind of know.
And you're doing good. Like
you're saving the universe. We're
yeah.
here to protect the innocent. You know,
yes.
we're here to shield like you do with your warnings to just let people know that, you know, there's bad stuff out there, but
sure.
you don't want to see it. And then when you see it the first time, it's like, ooh, is this thrill of excitement? And or you know,
you found it, you
yeah,
got it.
Yeah, or if it's like a, you know, a suicide or something, it's more like, geez, what do I do? What do I do? But you're not in it. You think you're going to be like an ambulance driver or, you know, a fire person. You know, you don't think you're going to be really engaged with it, but it does
get
touch you. Yeah,
of course. I don't see how it couldn't. What kind of training do you get for looking at stuff?
Oh, we got 8 whole days of learning what the rules are.
Okay.
Basically, you know, and being told not to discuss your job with anybody else and just learning about the company. But it's mostly just about the rules. It's, you don't learn really anything about yourself or how to manage your feelings.
It's odd that I would say when you're dealing with difficult content, talking about it with your colleagues who are going through maybe something similar, however big that team or small is, would be imperative.
Yeah, but we don't. You don't. I mean, when you're in your training and they say, all right, today we're going to do, you know, child abuse. And if you see anything disturbing, it's okay to walk out of the room and take a breather. But that's like saying it's okay to quit your job if you don't like it, because if you can't sit and do it. So we all sit there, kind of sitting on your hands going, oh, it's, yeah, okay, right, I'm just going to process this. And then you take that with you into the workplace, and that's just the way it is. You don't really talk about it very much.
Chris, how many pieces of content would you assess in one shift?
I would say maybe 100 per hour.
Whoa, that's a lot of content.
Yeah, for 6 or 8 hours a night. It's a lot, yeah.
That's an overwhelming workload.
Well, a lot of it is actually very simple. You know, if somebody's just typed, I hate Irish people because blah, 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 you see that line, you go, okay, that's hate speech, click, and it's done. It takes you 3 seconds,
yeah, okay.
5 seconds.
Okay.
But then you get the one that, you know, you play it 3 times and you ask your friends and they all gather around and you're all looking at it and you have to get the rules out and get digging down into the details to figure out what is the right action to take. So it averages, you know, 1 every 30 seconds.
I know it's difficult, but in order for people to understand how bad it was, can you tell me about some of the tougher stuff you saw?
Oh, God, I knew you were going to ask me this. I don't like talking about this stuff. I mean, you can see it now. I'm a bit trembly, just my stomach's in knots, but somebody was trying to raise awareness of what was going on in Myanmar, the killings of the Rohingya people. And they'd put together, it was just a photograph or a composite photograph of burnt villages and refugees trudging down the road. And one of the images was of a baby just lying flat on the ground with its arms out, and there was a man's foot pressing down on its chest. And you just look at it and you go, oh, well, that's a violent death, so that's deleted under whichever clause of whichever rule, blah, blah, blah. And I got audited on that one. We get checked, and, you know, he argued, how do you know the baby's dead? And we're having this argument about, well, it's not pushing back, it's not pushing, it's not screaming, it's not using its arms, so it must be dead. And I've won the point back, I got the point. And then it hits you ages later, like, yeah, nobody cares about the baby. And this stuff's happening in Myanmar in the same way that it's happening in the US or the UK or in the north of Ireland especially. People are out there spreading hate and pushing these messages that it's okay to do these things. And we're leaving those messages up. I spent a lot of time looking at hateful content. And very often you kind of look at it and you apply the rules and you go, okay, you're allowed to say that.
Chris, so
feel guilty, you know.
Oh, sure.
We caused that. That baby's dead because of me.
Just seeing that kind of content shift your perspective on life, because we all know there's hate speech out there, and we all know there's hateful content, and we all know. But to witness it and to see it as part of your job, psychologically, what effect has that had?
You're immersed in it, and you notice the certain attitudes and emotions that are prevalent throughout all this content. You know, and people who are not doing very well in their lives, they're looking for somebody to blame, somebody to punch down at.
Yeah.
And you start to become super, super sensitive to that. You know, the somebody who's having a bad day and shouting down the customer service phone line, for example, or just complaining online about something didn't work, you're putting those people in the same category as the mass murderers and the terrorists and the child molesters. You know, you start to just see everybody as being right on the edge of becoming the world's worst person. So it really pulls you down.
Yeah.
It really pulls you down.
Well, your family and friends, do they see a difference in you while you were working there? Do they see you a decline in your mental health, or could you talk to them about it?
Well, you can't talk about it.
No.
You know, I mean, it's hammered into you on day one. You've signed this non-disclosure agreement. You can't tell anybody what you do or where you work. We don't have a logo outside the building.
Sure.
Because we don't want anybody who's angry at a decision turning up to, you know, to have an argument with the moderators. It's all under wraps and you're not allowed to discuss it. So you're very isolated. I know that when I left the job, finally I came home to my wife and said, "Whoa, that's it, I'm out." And she said, "Oh, thank God for that.
Yeah.
You've been so just angry and stressed for the last 6 months. You know, I want my husband back. I want the nice guy, the happy guy."
Did she get him back?
Eventually. It's taken a long time. It's been a real uphill struggle, and I've really only been able to do it because I have been forced to face up to it. I've met a lot of people who, you know, they're afraid to acknowledge it. They contact me because they've seen me in a newspaper or something, and they want to talk to somebody who understands, but they don't want to take the next step of acknowledging. A lot of them are still in the job. They need the money.
Is it true that it was when you were talking to a journalist about your job, you broke down? Is that when?
Oh, God, did I ever? Oh, that was the worst day of my life. It was one of my other colleagues. He'd talked to a journalist and she wanted somebody else to validate his story. And I said, "Oh, we'll have an off-the-record little chat and we'll talk about management systems and hiring protocols and, you know, all that good stuff that I'm interested in." And she wanted to talk about the content that I'd seen. And I had never done that. And it's like you're looking into a swimming pool or a pool of dark water, trying to find, well, what am I going to talk about? And you can see these images starting to appear out of the water. And it's like they just burst out of the water and grab a hold of you and start
slapping
you. Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it took me a long time, but I see these people as victims. The ones that we couldn't help, the you know the babies, the teenager that commits suicide, the people in the Middle East sure. that have died a horrible death, and somebody has risked their life to get that video out, and we've deleted it.
You were diagnosed with PTSD?
It's not actually PTSD. It's some very slight variant. I'm not really qualified to talk about the details of that. But yeah, I'm all messed up.
Aren't we all? Some problem with the wiring
in the brain. It's some problem there.
How are you doing now? Years out of it.
Well, I must be good. I've been out for a few years, and I work now with people, face to face contact with real people. And as I've become more self-aware, I've learned not only to manage my feelings, but to understand other people's feelings. And we've taken a bit more drastic action with some of the therapy to try and fix the wiring problems. So when I encounter difficult situations and conflicts now, I can kind of go, right, I know what's happening and I know how to deal with it. It's sometimes hard, but that's hard for anybody. I think what's harder is you'll be talking to somebody and they'll say, oh, I saw this thing on Facebook, or even somebody sent me this video on WhatsApp, look, and they want to show you their phone. And I shy away. I don't have any social media. I don't want to look at any form of online conversation, discussion, the funny thing that people are sending around, because I've just got this, I'm waiting for the bad thing to happen.
Yeah.
You know, where you have the happy Peppa Pig music and the pig walking around, and then somebody suddenly lops its head off. And there's blood everywhere. You know, that was my day for so long that I'm still on edge waiting for that to happen.
You've no social media presence?
No. Well, I'm still on LinkedIn, so I'm findable by researchers and journalists, but I don't post anything.
Do you find more and more people are opting for that kind of a life?
No, but it's quite surprising how many people say they wish they could.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of people, because it sucks your time and your energy as well. You know, we all understand now that we're just a commodity. We're just the product that's being sold to the advertisers. But most of us are just, we're dependent on it. We're so stuck with it. There's nothing we can do.
How's your life without it?
Lovely. Much, much better. Yeah, I don't miss it.
Well, that's good. There's nothing to miss. Well, your perspective on life, I'm interested to know, because when you, looking at such darkness, do you avoid the news and stuff like that? Because obviously it's quite miserable and negative at the moment. If you hear it, do you turn it off? If you see it, do you avoid that? And is that helping you to cope better?
I don't follow the news. I just keep a kind of general awareness of what's going on.
Okay.
You know, I'll look at headlines, and then I'll read more detailed stories that go into depth about topics to give me a better understanding. But I do very much, I stray away from all the human interest angle.
It's the emotive stuff. Yeah, of course. It's interesting because other moderators across the world are speaking out and speaking up about their experiences and taking court cases against their employers like you are. What do you want to see happen? Because your job, I would say, in the world that we're living in, is imperative, for protecting some people. I mean, it's a very, it sounds like a very important job to do, to protect us from seeing the darkness, so to speak. But what needs to be done, or is there anything that can be done for a job like that? Is there any kind of protection in place? How do we protect people like you and people who are still in the job from not losing their mind, so to speak?
I don't know. More alcohol at work. it's a tough one because nobody knows.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever researched this. And the Silicon Valley way of doing things is we'll test it, we'll do this, and if that doesn't work, we'll try this. And if that doesn't work, we'll try this. And you keep finding something that works and then you scale it. But what they've done here is they've just said, oh, let's try this. Okay, and now we'll make it bigger until it works. And I think they've just got to say, we don't know what works. We've got to admit that we don't know what we're doing here and start being open to criticism
and
ideas from other people. Instead of, I meet a lot of these people. I go to conferences now. I get invited to join workshops and seminars. And there's all these experts who have grown up around this industry. And they're all, it's a echo chamber. It's a feedback loop that everybody is confident they know what needs to be done. Very few people are saying, no, we don't. This is a whole new thing that we've never had to study before. And, I've read the statement from Facebook where they're talking about the support they provide. We don't know what support people need because you won't let independent researchers in to meet with the people that are affected. Facebook, all of the social media companies, they keep this under wraps.
Of course.
And they insist they know what's right.
Speaking about their right to reply, we've contacted Facebook and we offer them a right to reply. And this is what they said. They said, we are committed to ensuring that our partners provide support for those that review content from Meta, as we recognise that reviewing certain types of content can sometimes be difficult.
That reminds me of my interview.
Yeah.
You do not. Sometimes you may see material that some people might find disturbing.
Everyone who reviews content for Meta goes through an in-depth, multi-week training program on our community standards and has access to extensive psychological support to ensure their well-being. This includes 24/7 on-site support with trained practitioners, an on-call service, and access to private healthcare from the first day of employment. For many years, we have had technical solutions to limit reviewers' exposure to graphic material as much as possible. This is an important issue, and we are committed to getting this right. Well, I hope so, for everybody's sake. It always baffles me about social media that they are so quick that if I have a conversation about Nike Air Max, I am inundated with ads for Nike Air Max and runners and stuff like that. However, if there's content like that that is obscene or needs to be taken down or not, it's a bit of a slower process, isn't it? It's a little bit slower. And it
takes everything
people
goes
like
into
you.
A queue.
Yeah.
To be seen by me. So I would sit down at 6 o'clock in the evening, and the day shift have been working all day, and there's 20,000 items in the queue for the UK and Ireland. That's the high priority queue. There are other queues as well.
I kind of knew people like you existed. I have a friend who does something similar for another organisation. It didn't register how harrowing the job could be, and I could talk to you all day, but I think I'm going to read your book. let's get the book. It's definitely, I mean, your conversation today is definitely going to make myself for sure and others think a little more when we're using social media every single day. Your book is called The Moderator by Chris Gray. It's published by Gill Books. It's out now.
It's out today. Hurrah. It's only taken 2 years.
Only two years of my life. What was it like writing the book? Was it therapeutic?
I went to Bali during COVID.
I hope you talked to Mrs.
Oh, no, she's from there. So we rented a nice villa and
I dictated
this book, voice to text, on my phone, standing by my swimming pool. And I would pace up and down nervously, speaking the words, thinking, right, this is it. I'm getting it out there. I'm clearing my mind. This is my therapy. This is drawing a line under the whole episode. And it's not.
You come into a radio studio and I'm asking you what's the most graphic piece of content.
Still talking about it. Yeah.
Still talking about it. But we need to have these conversations.
Well, it's the price you pay. You know, I could have just sit back and let the lawyers deal with the court case and that'll take 10 years or whatever. But I could just hide. But nobody speaks for all of the thousands, tens of thousands of people doing this work because they're all afraid of the NDA and where am I going to work next and what am I going to do if I lose this job? So somebody has to take the decision, okay, this can be hard sometimes, but I'm strong enough. I'm going to do this.
And we're very grateful that you did and that you're doing it. Chris Gray, thank you so much for coming in.
Jennifer Zaffarelli. Weekday morning from 9 on 2FM.